Let's see. Did we win?
Actually, it was 76.
70. We
18 of your last 20, or
but that was 75. We pumped. Okay. That's what we got. No, we got in the playoffs in 73 and 74 again. So it had to be 74, maybe, wasn't it?
Okay, but you had to win a remarkable number of games down the stretch to catch them.
Well, we had to win a lot of ball games to catch the Yankees, and we just kind of got on a roll. Every game we were winning games, doing different things, not scoring a lot of runs. And of course, Earl Weaver was our manager, was always a proponent of the three-run homer. He disdained the bunt. He thought that was a terrible play. He thought hitting and running was a terrible play. And we had a few guys on that team that could hit and run. But he didn't like that because there's too many negative things that could come out of bunting a guy over. And also, you're giving away an out. You only get three outs an inning. He said, you're giving away one. I don't like it. Or hitting and running, So anyway, we just felt like we could have won a lot of games if we'd have got a guy over, got him in scoring position, base hit, wins the game. So we had a meeting at Paul Blair. We decided, well, let's go to Blair's house and talk about it. So all the players came to Blair's house, and we sat down, and we said, well, we've got to get guys in scoring position and move them over where they have a chance to score. We're not scoring a lot of runs. And so Earl doesn't like to bunt. He said, when we get a guy on first, he said, from now on, just bunt him over. You know, and if Earl gives you the hit sign, just bunt him over. So it took Earl about three or four games to finally figure out what the heck we were doing in that situation, you know. And I think he ended up saying, well, you better be right. If you don't follow these signs, you better be right. But that was one of the times that I think the guys got a little upset at Earl because he wouldn't go away from the game that he had been accustomed to all his life, was scoring a lot of runs. But it worked out well, and Earl loved us all anyway.
Can I ask you to talk a little bit about umpires? They're the forgotten part of the on-field game, and they obviously play a role. Can you talk about the umpires that you thought in your day were particularly good? We'll forget the ones who weren't particularly good, but there obviously were some significant umpires in those years, and again, some of them are in the Hall of Fame. Can you talk about the ones that thought did a good job?
Yeah, well, I think the umpires that you probably don't hear a lot about are usually the ones that are the best umpires.
Right.
And it's pretty unanimous around the league of all the players. I mean, they all know the best umpires. They know which umpire gives you the best job behind the plate. And a fellow who's in the Hall of Fame, Nestor Shylock, had always, in my time, probably the best umpire that I've seen. Ed Runge, another umpire who we all knew that he had a monstrous strike zone. You know, if it's close, you better swing. Especially up to two, he just wanted the game to be speeded along. The first two strikes, but that third strike had to be a strike. The rest of them, he gave the pitchers a little breathing room. But Nestor Shylock was really the best umpire in my days. Ed Hurley, another umpire, a little confrontational, I guess, with a lot of the players, but you knew what umpires you could say something to, and umpires you better watch your step. But Ed Hurley, Cal Hubbard, remember
right.
Cal
old
way back?
Player, yeah.
Yeah, Cal Hubbard was here at that particular time.
How about Bill McGowan? Was he?
He retired when I got to. Yeah.
Of course, the National League had Barlick.
Al Barlick, everyone, it was just unanimous. You'd talk to any player and they'd say Al Barlick's the best, you know, or Jock O'Conlon. Jock O'Conlon is the best. And it pretty, you get a reputation, and deservedly so, you earn it. And but everyone really knows who the best umpires are, and then consequently, most of them are in the Hall of Fame.
Brooks, you obviously were a major figure in the golden age of baseball, the 60s and 70s. Knowing what you know about the economic situation, 23 one-year contracts, would you exchange any of that for the opportunity to be in today's earning bracket? Or does it boggle your mind, the salaries that the players earn these days?
Well, it boggles my mind. I think it boggles everyone's mind, the salaries. But I tell people, look, I'm happy I played when I did. I'm sure that I'm having much more fun than the players today. They're a lot more on their mind than I had on my mind, and I think I played at the best time with the best players. And today's players, they have the same dream that I did. That's to be a big league player. It's just different situation now, and basically their philosophy is, look, all this money out there, I'm just asking for it. I'm not going in there and saying, hey, give me all your money. This is what I'm asking for. If we lived in a society where the importance of your job dictated how much you were going to make, then the baseball player would be at the bottom of the heap, I think, and people who work in cancer research or AIDS research or teachers or policemen or firemen would make the most money, but that's not reality. You know, we live in a society where entertainers and athletes are going to make more than anyone else, just a fact of life. And I think that's kind of how the way they rationalize what's going on out there. They know it's crazy. I mean, they make these humongous salaries and they just kind of laugh. Can you believe it? You know, and but I'm happy I played. It worked out great for me. I do think that back when I played, if the owners would have been lenient. I don't know if it's lenient or not, but
enlightened. How about enlightened?
Enlightened is a good word. They'd have been a little more enlightened. I mean, but basically, you know, their philosophy when I played is, look, this reserve clause has been away around for 100 years. You like it because that's the way it's going to be. And I think there's many times that deals could have been struck which would have been much better for the game economically and for the players too, you know, as to what's opposed to what's going on now.
All right. You're absolutely right, by the way.
Yes.
I'll come back about Marvin Miller, your thoughts on the role that he and the Hall.
Hmm. I'm in charge of dinner.
Wish I could stay.
You made a good dinner.
Yeah, I wish I could stay. But
you're working.
I know. Yeah. Sixers game tonight. Big Sixers.
Oh, who's playing tonight? Sixers
Houston.
And the Knicks?
Houston.
Minor sport.
Oh, Houston. Yeah.
Eddie Griffin's homecoming to Philadelphia.
Oh, did you get a hold of Rashid, by the way?
Not yet.
Good luck.
I've been covering the Eagles too much.
Good luck.
This is very good. Right?
What? Okay.
Are you covering the Eagles?
Yes, I'll be in Chicago.
Okay. Well, Sean Landetta, personal friend.
Oh, okay.
He was my kids and they all played together.
Oh, wow.
And,
okay.
He wore number 5 because of me for many, many years.
I'm going to ask him about that.
I called him the other day and left a message on his cell phone just telling him congratulations when he broke the record for most punts. But tell him I'm thinking about him all the time.
I will. I'll see him tomorrow.
He's amazing, isn't he?
He's a wonderful man.
Good career for him.
Yeah,
he's a real nice guy.
Are you ready?
Yes.
All right. You just going back to the economics for one more minute, yeah. Brooks, could you talk about the role that Marvin Miller played in that and your thoughts on Marvin possibly being in the Hall of Fame?
Repeat that one more time. I'm sorry.
Talk about your thoughts on Marvin Miller, the union leader who was instrumental in getting the players out of the reserve cause, getting them to this tremendous wealth, and is he a Hall of Famer?
Okay. Actually, I was a part of the first baseball strike going back to 1972, which lasted 3 or 4 days in spring training and 3 or 4 days during the season. It's like comparing apples and oranges now. But now Marvin Miller was who came on board, I guess, a few years before I really got interested in the Players Association. Robin Roberts and Bob Feller and a couple of other players were instrumental in getting Marvin. But I thought Marvin had a pretty good foresight on what was going on. I don't think anybody could project what's happening now, but at least I think Marvin was the fact that he saw that there were some inequities that the players should be, you know, getting a little more of the pie, I guess you could say. But I think there's a Marvin. I don't know the criteria for the Hall of Fame, but I mean, if you're looking for someone who had a real impact on the game, Marvin Miller would certainly be a gentleman who should be considered to the Hall of Fame if there is such a category for that. But Marvin just, you know, he got the confidence of the players, and he said, well, this is right and this is wrong, and they believed him. So he had a big impact on the game of baseball. And I do think the owners, instead of taking the position, well, look, this reserve clause has been here forever. There were many times, I think, that the players would have struck any kind of deal that wouldn't have been for life. And, I mean, how would you like to be a catcher behind Johnny Bench, or Mike Schmidt at third? From that part of it, that's why it didn't affect me, because I was playing every day. But I certainly stunted the growth of a guy like Doug DeSensei for a couple of years. But I think the players would have settled for anything other than life of a contract. But anyway, it didn't work out. I think Marvin, if there's a category where he could be put into the Hall of Fame, that he deserves it.
And apropos of the same subject, for the record, can you talk a little bit about your views on what Pete Rose engaged in? And I mean, I submit that Pete Rose bet on baseball because I was involved, but sure. You're a Hall of Famer, and I think people will be interested in your views on...
Well, first of all, yeah, Pete Rose banned himself from the game of baseball. He signed the five-page document or whatever it was that banned him from baseball, and there's no doubt in my mind that he bet on the games. And I think that he has... that if you talk to every Hall of Famer right now, most of them would say is, look, all I want Pete to say is, I did it, I'm sorry, I'm not bigger than the game, and I think all the players, then he would be forgiven. You know, I mean, that's all I'm looking for. Here's a fellow who's been humiliated. He's lost a lot of money. He's made a lot of money, but he's lost a lot of money, and it goes on and on and on. But, you know, if I was not guilty of something, I would tell the commissioner that, look, you can send me to Siberia, but I'm not signing that because I didn't bet on the game. And I think that him signing that five-page document, I don't care what other side effects it might have, that just told me that, look, you know, I've read enough, read the Dow report, and it's clear to me that Pete bet on the games. But I think he suffered enough, and I just want to hear him say, I'm sorry, I did it, and I'm not bigger than the game, then I'd say, hey, Pete, welcome to the Hall of Fame. You've been out 10, 12 years.
I think you're absolutely right. Look, for the record, I agree with that. I think if he would come clean and tell people why it's damaging to baseball, help baseball, baseball, I think, would be helpful to him.
Yeah.
I'm not sure it's going to happen. But
I'm not sure either. But when people look at this, they'll... Well, I know a couple guys that are really working on him, and they're using the tact that, hey, Pete, look, you know, it's been 10, 11 years, but what would your dad want? I mean, you know, your dad, and they're...
Well, they're right.
And I think they're working on him. I don't know what kind of compromise that Seeley would use, but, I mean, I've heard Bud, you know, Bud, he's not going to get in as long as Bud's the commit. So, who knows?
Well, I want to talk to you, as your career came to an end, one of the things that we always talk to players about is you're a great player, you know as you get older the day is going to come when you're going to stop. Can you talk a little bit about how you viewed the ending of your career and the next stage and how you've gone about creating the next part of your life, and has it been a good and satisfying life?
I thought I was going to play forever, and I always said, hey, they're going to have to tear this uniform off of my back, but it really didn't happen like that. And this is a controversial question that comes up all the time, will the guys play too long? And I've looked through the record books, and I'll tell you what, just about every player played too long. I mean, no one knows when they're, everyone thinks that they can still do it. Everyone thinks that they've found a fountain of youth, or everyone thinks they've made some adjustments in their swing and they're going to come back and do it. And I thought so too. I played too long, you know, but I loved it. I never wanted to do anything else. And in that respect, my answer to that always is, look, I think it's such a business now. I think that you should play as long as you can, and they'll let you know when you should retire. But in 1975, I didn't play well, didn't hit at all. So I came back consequently thinking I could still play, but I knew that DeSensei was going to be the third baseman. I called Seattle, I called Toronto, this was in 77, thinking that I might make a move up there and might be able to, you know, do something in the organization when I did retire. And the best thing that happened to me was to get no response from those two teams and come back to Baltimore and finish up my career. I came back as a player coach, but I really came back to play. About the middle of the season, Doug was doing well, I was not playing, and I said, well, this is it, you know, my career is over. And I just kind of lost interest, which I never thought I would, but I couldn't wait till the season got over and I got out. I mean, I retired probably around the 1st of September when we had to have a roster. Rick Dempsey was coming back on. I retired that particular day, but it was not any big transition. I just kind of lost interest in what was happening. I wasn't playing, and I knew that I didn't want to manage. I had several opportunities to talk to people about managing a big league team. I had someone from Chicago, I don't know who it was, call me in 77 when it was like tampering, I guess, but said, well, are you interested in managing? This was the White Sox. And I said, well, I really haven't thought a whole lot about it. And they said, well, let us know by tomorrow. So I called my wife on the phone, and anyway, we decided that I didn't want any part of managing. I loved to play, and when they said I couldn't play anymore, I lost interest as far as I never wanted to be a manager. But life has been wonderful. I mean, getting out of the game and thinking that you might have a chance to attain the Hall of Fame and then get voted into the Hall of Fame, and certainly gives you an opportunity to do a lot of things that other players don't get a chance to do. And it's just kind of pick and choose. And I've been married 41 years, and I've been away 17, so I've been catching up on being married, you know, and being home a lot and doing a lot of fun things, all baseball related. And I think what's happened in the game of baseball with more television, more radio, and just gives everyone more exposure. And the players, we have a Major League Baseball Player Alumni Association now, and I'm the president of that group. And we're a nonprofit, and all we do is promote the game of baseball. We have so many players who leave the game and kind of drop through the cracks, never to be heard from again. And so we try to get those guys involved, and we do about 40 golf tournaments around the country, and we get a lot of players involved. And I see guys I haven't seen in 20 or 30 years. I might play in 6 or 7 of those golf tournaments. So I've been enjoying myself. This is my 25th year, I guess, out of the game since I played. And I'm having more fun now than I ever did.
Brooks, can you talk a little bit about the game on the field? Is it different? That is, bunting. You mentioned earlier that Weaver disdained the bunt. You don't see too many guys bunting the runner over. Stengel always bunted. That was his strategy. If a guy got on, he'd bunt. Now, there are a lot of skills that I think these kids don't learn. I'm interested in your sort of distinguishing the baseball you grew up playing and the baseball you see today and what the differences are.
Well, I definitely think there's some differences in the game today than opposed to when I played. I mean, it's I think it's because a number of reasons. I think just the way the game is now. I mean, it seems to be more offense, and these things all run in cycles, I guess. But we've certainly seen our offense in the last 10 or 15 years, and I think my own opinion is the ball is juiced up some. The players are stronger. The ballparks are smaller. And you just got more guys are hitting home runs. I mean, now that it's just what's happening in the game is unbelievable. I mean, you have McGuire breaking Maris's record, and then the next year or so you had Barry Bonds doing the same thing, and it's hard to keep up with. But as I said before, the guys all had the same dream that I did. But I think the game has changed. The money has changed the game a great deal. Players, the money in some respect has spoiled a lot of players. I'm kind of ranting and raving now here. Let me see what I can say. and your question, give me that question.
Just the on-field, the skills, the hitting behind the runner, the hit and run, the bunt. Are there differences in the game?
Yeah.
With little baseball, which is, I guess, what's that called, is kind of gone. And I'm wondering if you've got thoughts on the difference?
Well, yeah, I think the game has changed in a way with the way the ball is flying out of the ballpark, and the ballparks are smaller, the players are bigger and stronger.
Artificial turf.
Someone asked me about it when it first came about, and I don't know how you put numbers on it, but I guarantee you, if I played 162 games on Astros,